welcome everyone to Rock M Nation Podcasts. I am your host, Sam Snelling. We are here for another brand new episode of Dive Cuts, which is our little basketball podcast. We are on season 5, episode 19 already. Season is just breezing right by. We're at the end of January. This is Monday, January 31st. You're probably listening to this on Tuesday, February 1st or thereafter. With me, as always, helping out with this top 10 SB Nation College podcast, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. We're preparing for 11 to 15 inches of snow this week in Indianapolis. So about ready to get buried here. Yeah, looking forward to impromptu snow days in the middle of this week.
Yeah, the the weather is looking a little ominous. And I'm actually kind of wondering if they're even gonna go ahead with the game. My general take on weather impacted games is they've got some TV time, some slots that need to be filled, and so they'll probably play because there's a lot of money at stake. And a little snow is not going to stop us from playing some basketball. You and I just watched a week of Missouri basketball. Last we gathered, they had lost a close road game to Alabama after beating Mississippi on the road. We knew going into last week that it was going to be a sort of a tough week to find a win. You're hosting Auburn at home and going to Iowa State on the road. Little did we know that the home game against Auburn would turn out to be the much closer basketball game. Although, far be it for me to remember a game getting away from Missouri and Ames. So they played well against Auburn. They defended well against Auburn and turned that into like a mud wrestling match and did really pretty well up until like the wheels kind of came off with about 16 minutes to play in the second half at Iowa State. So do you have any supreme takeaways from the week that was?
The defense is giving them a puncher's chance for stretches of games now. Which is it for Konzo. It's vaguely reassuring that one of his hallmarks of his programs is kind of trying to make an appearance there. It's just really, really hard for this team at this point to really sort of sustain that sort of level of intensity, for quite a while. They tried it Tuesday. You saw what happens when that, does hold up for 40 minutes. They did a fantastic job with the scout and with executing it against Auburn and really a team that plays with good pace. Their modified flex offense is really tough to stop. They did a nice job, I think, putting a guy like Jabari Smith in spots on the floor where he doesn't like to operate. Thought they did a good job selectively playing with pace off their defense to try and flatten out Auburn before they could get set. It was a good game plan. So I think that and to see them execute it and in the sort of environment that, is all too uncommon in Columbia, these days, it was good to sort of see all those pieces come together. We can talk about the timeout in Broglio in a minute, but, I think overall you have to be heartened by the effort there. That could have been a regression game coming off of a tough loss at Bama, but they geared up, they got an otherwise solid performance. And then in Ames, that's a bad matchup for Missouri, the way Iowa State defends, what they want to do, and how Missouri's base offense is sort of built is a bad fit for a team that wants to eat you up on side ball screens. And a lot of Missouri's offense is in side ball screens. So that was a bad matchup there. Iowa State had the scout nailed on Kobe Brown and on Amari Davis. Javon Pickett was not available for long stretches after appearing to bang his head. And as you said, pre-pod, it's problematic when Javon Pickett being absent causes your offense to be that poor for long stretches. So defensively saw some improvement, but offensively this team is just so limited, and last week only reinforced that. So a mixed bag, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice. And I think one of the things that, you know, kind of going into the season that I don't want to say made us positive about the future of the team. I think we were pretty realistic that this team was probably going to be pretty limited. But if you're looking for reasons to hope, it was like, well, you know, Konza Martin has always sort of fielded really pretty good defensive ball clubs. And then they just came out for like the first, you know, three quarters of the games that have been played so far, and we're just not good defensively. And so that's like raises all kinds of flags. Like what's going on here? And I think even, you know, you and I have kind of talked about it in private when it comes to, you know, like what was Konza going to do to sort of be more successful? Well, he needed to take the sort of blueprint that he had built, you know, of toughness, defensive rebounding, and he needed to be able to evolve on offense. And I feel like as he's evolved on offense, they've lost this identity of being like a blue collar defensive team and really defending teams well. And I just don't think that he's really quite had a good consistent defensive team since he's been here. As I pull up the adjusted defensive numbers, they were 43rd his first year, 51st, 71st, 57th, and now they're 130th. And so my sort of thought going into the year was if they can field a top 100 level defense, you know, top 75. So their worst team was in year three at 71st. If they're able to do that, and I think they've got enough things that they can do offensively to at least be respectable. Not as bad as they were in the non-conference schedule. It's sort of interesting to see like maybe some of those light bulbs kind of going off and things improving on that side of the ball. It's still not quite, you know, where it needs to be and not quite good enough. But improvement is certainly happening in some degree.
Yeah. If you look at the conference only numbers on KenPom, they're third in effective field goal percentage defense, second in the conference for 3-point defense, fourth in 2-point defense. They're 13th overall in efficiency. What hurts them is the fact they don't create a lot of takeaways. And as we saw against Auburn, that you can, and to a degree against Alabama, and what you noted in study hall, you can absolutely abuse this team on the glass. It's really, really stunning how, and even Iowa State, a team that didn't have a major size advantage, was able to outwork them on the glass. I think the other thing that, you know, we saw too is, you know, this team has one rim protector in Trevin Brazil, but they're still 11th in block rate. So this team can defend a little bit, I think, on the primary shot. They do a good job, I think, if they can load up. But man, if you get on the glass against them or you get to the cup, they might foul you, or you're going to be able to get a second opportunity. And it doesn't matter how well you defend initially, if you're giving up 8, 9, 10 second possessions a game and teams are getting 11 more shots than you, it's just hard to win games that way. So I think the primary defensive possessions have been better, but this team still has roster deficiencies elsewhere. Doesn't help too when we saw against Iowa State, when you're just when you're having so many turnovers, not even a lot of them live ball turnovers, when you're just giving away those kind of possessions, it just puts more pressure on that defense to hold up. So if this were a normal year where, you know, ball handling was average and they had even average rebounding, you might say, okay, there's some progress here. But this team, like you said in study hall, it just leaks possessions everywhere. And that's just makes it hard. Even if you are doing a better job for the most part on defense, there's just the possession volume just gets so big that you can't overcome it. So I think that's sort of the lingering takeaway too.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting. I've got Missouri's KenPom page, and one of the things that I've always liked about KenPom is, at least especially back when I was still previewing, Josh is doing a good job of, previewing all the opponents. But one of the benefits of doing a preview is you can actually just pull up a team page and see like what the depth chart looks like over the last five games. For that, Missouri, like Kobe Brown is playing like 79% of the minutes over the last five games at the five spot. I guess you could debate whether he or Ryan DeGray are actually playing the five.
They interchange it a lot. It's like we always say, who are you guarding? Ryan DeGray is guarding centers. So I can say.
Yeah, Ryan DeGray guards more centers. Kobe Brown, does guard more forwards. But Kobe does guard his fair share of centers. And so you've got 43% of the minutes at power forward for Ryan DeGray, 79% at center for Kobe. And like Kobe's listed at 6'8". I think that's a stretch. Ronnie's listed at 6'6". That seems about right.
Yeah.
And so you're just asking like just two undersized guys and guys that are probably more at home to being in that more kind of combo forward role to guarding bigger dudes. And that slides down all the way down the lineup. So it's as we've said before, it's one of the deficiencies of the roster is, and you look at like who they tried to kind of bring in the offseason with, at least with freshmen, and one of those freshmen is already gone. And that, he was one of the guys who actually had good, size for his position. Trevin's kind of the same way. Like Trevin's like a 6'9", combo forward. Brookshire's a little undersized at the combo guard spot, but Yaya's got solid size at 6'8" or 6'9". And I think part of it is the roster construction. Konzo's really kind of in his history had a lot of big dudes on his roster, and he just doesn't have that with this roster.
Yeah. And if you looked at that page too, like people say, oh, Kobe Brown's got a 20% defensive rebound rate. This is why I wish we had like second spectrum stats, which they have in the NBA, because you can measure contested rebound rate. Like this is not a slight at Kobe, because somebody's got to go get the ball, but teams bail out on Missouri at times too, just to keep them out of transition to set their defense. So Kobe can get some uncontested boards and kind of juice that number a little bit. I'd be curious what the roster's contested rebound rate looks like. I'm sure it would not be good for a lot of them. Like DeJuan Gordon's actually a pretty good rebounder for a guard at about 13%, 14% on the defensive glass. Ryan DeGray's round average probably around like 12%. Everyone else is meh. Like there's just not a lot of. And that was sort of a thing that you could at least sneakily count on the last couple of years, was Missouri's guards were pretty good rebounders the last couple of years. So they could sort of
Drew and Mark.
Yeah. And if Tilly went and sat,
and really even X was
X would stick his nose in. And
despite his
frame,
his frame is actually a pretty good rebounder.
Yeah. So when Tilly would go to the bench last year and maybe you had to play a little smaller, you still had three guards on the floor that could go get you 50-50 balls, especially long rebounds. Missouri doesn't really have that right now. So roster deficiencies are there. But the other thing that stands out is obviously it's been talked to death. I don't know how long we'll spend on it. It's just the decision to let the final 35 seconds play out on Tuesday. We all, as armchair coaches, have reached a consensus that there should have been a foul earlier in that possession. Some might have said right away at 30. Some may have said let it play out to 12. But all of us, the armchair coaches of America, have decided that it's that a foul probably would have been warranted earlier in that possession. I'm sure.
So my general approach with this is if it is under a minute and you are behind, like you should foul. Like the other team has the possession, you are under a minute, you do not want to waste clock.
Time is your ally. It is it is the most important commodity.
I mean, like within reason. So like obviously down a point, okay, maybe you let that bleed a little closer, but the main thing that you want to maintain is is clock. So if you foul somebody, and so I was one of the guys, I'm on board. Once Pickett buried that three, they should have fouled right away. Now, if you don't want Wendell Green taking those free throws, then you trap him.
And then force an easy out.
And you make him give up the ball. Yeah. You give up the ball, foul the next guy. But, you know, if you foul 28 seconds, they make both shots, you have 28 seconds to either go get a two and extend the game or get a 3-point attempt and try to tie the game.
Right.
But taking it all the way down to 5 seconds. And I really like, I think you guys were kind of saying, oh, like maybe you kind of run some traps. And then if it gets down to like 12, then you foul. Because I think if you foul at 28, you're probably going to get the ball back again after you already had that possession again. Yeah. So you're going to, you can get multiple possessions and Missouri doesn't score that well. Auburn, if you foul the right guy, is not a great free throw shooting team. So if you can coax a miss on that first set, then you go down and get a two and you can tie the game. But you know, that's not the decision that they made. And so one of the things, and I want to kind of continue on this, and I'll kind of get your thoughts on it. One of the things that somebody was sort of pointing out to me is, and I agree with this, having been the assistant, like it's the assistant coach's job, really.
Yeah.
To speak up in those situations, yeah. to kind of remind coach. A lot of the head coaches get really caught up in the action. I've played for and been around coaches that sometimes you have to remind them what the clock says, what the score is, and who's got how many fouls, and like that. So that's your job as an assistant coach. So I actually put a lot of that. And granted, this is also on Konzo, because ultimately it is his responsibility. But he needs to make sure that his assistants know like what their strategy is within like the last couple minutes. And that's a conversation that you have.
You have that at the under four.
You know, like they have these long media timeouts where you spend like a minute talking to your assistants and then a minute talking to your players. Like people think that they're in this timeout for all the time you're talking to your players.
No,
the players know what they're going to do. Like you've had 2 days of practice to talk about it. You're prepared.
You're going
but
back.
What they yeah. what you don't have is you don't have in-game strategy. And that's what you use a lot of the early minutes of those timeouts for.
Yeah. Usually you probably come back and you just remind guys, hey, we're doing, you know, when we come down, we're getting into this action because they can't handle this, or we're running, or this is what our coverage is on this play. We call this is what we're doing for this pick and roll coverage. Like it's just reminders over everything off the scout. Usually like if it's like final 2 minutes, yeah, you're going to see the whiteboard come out, but like having sat close enough to listen to timeouts, a lot of it, I think fans would be like, that's why these guys make millions of dollars, is just to like utter like,
right.
Just repeat that. Fans would be stunned how often
keep playing hard. Got a boxer guy out.
Just it's like the most rudimentary stuff, and they just scream it and repeat it. No, the real fun though is like to talk to the assistants afterwards. Like, what were you guys talking about the under four? Well, we were doing this because they were absolutely killing us in this set, so we wanted to do this. And like that first minute of the media timeouts where all the fun stuff happens, and then just coming back and yelling at guys to remind them to do the most basic things. But yeah,
If X player gets the ball, don't forget, you got to force him to his left.
Yeah,
like,
it's all scouting really report stuff.
The most basic stuff.
Yeah, it's really not like rocket science here. We're not having like a coach's clinic in the huddle at like the under four. It's
really, yeah. So all the complicated stuff happens before the game. And this is one of the things, like, I really think fans like overestimate, you know, the value of like in-game coaching. You know, because there's not a lot that you're actually doing like in the game other than yelling at guys and trying to remind them of what you'd already talked about.
The best thing was if you could ever see the whiteboard from pregame, because that's where like it's all scouting notes. It's like all filled with like the most fundamental scouting. Like the guys probably went through they went through a walkthrough. Maybe you printed out a 1 or 2 page scout for their guy, maybe, depending on what program you're in. And then you'll walk in, you may just see a bunch of crap scrawled on a whiteboard. It's all that stuff is happening before, but when they get out there, it's like, hey, we're just going to kind of roll with it. We're just going to remind you. But in that final, like, timeout situation, I would have maybe wanted to trap a little bit, or at least try and trap off the first inbound just to see if you catch them a little bit, because Missouri had been, they'd selectively ramped up ball pressure. Like, the pickup point at times is around half court. I maybe would have thrown on the trap just to see what they do with it, but then drop out of it quick. Like, maybe if you get a pass at the corner, you trap it, but then you're bailing out and you're fouling. Or if you get a timeout call and they go and they get to the midline, maybe you trap off that first inbound if you get it to a corner. Like, if you got an easy trap, take it. But, or you're trapping to do what you said, which is you want to give an easy outlet to a crappier free throw shooter. If you feel like you think you can get the turnover, maybe you try and take it down a little bit to 10 or 12. Because I get why Missouri did it, because they were having success in transition, flattening out Auburn and beating Kessler down the floor, so they weren't having to make rim finishes with a guy there in the paint in the restricted area. So I get all that rationale, but I think that where I get lost is the idea that, like, okay, we're going to take it down to 5. We've been getting, like, somebody on the stat sheet, like somebody, whether it's the ops guy or one of the stat, the assistant should be going, coach, they're like plus 12 on us on the defense, on like the offensive glass. They're killing us. Like, we're not going to get the, you know, we need to, I get what you're saying here and it makes sense, but are we even going to get the rebound for one? And say you're getting the ball off the glass at 5, you got to secure, you've got to now push and sprint to your lane. Like, 5 seconds is a tight window for that. Like, if you take it down. So that to me was where the breakdown happened. Like, if there had been 50 seconds left and you're going to try and get the board with 15 seconds, maybe you play it out because you're going to have some wiggle room on that. But where they were with just the amount of time left didn't make sense. Especially when you're getting killed on the glass. And I think they had Brazil on the bench for that. They had Brazil out for that. So you have an undersized lineup on the floor anyway. So it didn't make a lot of sense there personnel-wise. Maybe you cause a free throw. Auburn gets a put back off it. That's fine. But still, you fouled early enough, you're going to get possessions out of it. Plus, with no timeout, while that guy's at the line, you could have called somebody over and you could have said to Amari or whoever your ball handler was, okay, we're going to try, if they give us this look, we're going to run this. If they drop into this, we're going to have this set. You can try and steal some time there to use it as a short timeout so you can get a play in that you want. And then that guy can come back and you can come down. You can at least run some action that you want there rather than trying to make a playoff transition. So, yeah, just I think I would have fouled earlier. Maybe you give some wiggle room to force a trap, but you just can't let it go all the way down there. It relied on too many things going perfectly for a team that doesn't rebound particularly well and, you know, has struggled offensively. I would have wanted to give myself as much of an opportunity to run something I liked and, you know, maybe have an opportunity to extend the game.
So did you see, there are some videos being shared by some Mizzou fans, regarding, the two of the more decisive plays that Katie Johnson had executed. The first being, of course, jumping into Boogie Coleman to draw the foul. But the one that I didn't actually notice in like live action, but is pretty noticeable on the replay is he shuffled his feet on that second layup. And traveled.
The block charge thing is you are team get rid of the charge. I'm fine keeping some.
Well, like you. Yeah, there's no reason why you should be able to jump into a defender
right, like,
in that situation to me, and get the foul called. Like, that's a terrible call.
Yeah, to me, I don't mind if the offensive player initiates some contact, but if the defender stays vertical and has that right to that airspace, then you have the right to initiate a bump, but if they play with verticality and don't come down on you, like, if they don't swipe down, play on. Like, you tried to initiate. Because, like, we tell drivers all the time, take your shoulder to their chest, close the space, and try and finish. Like, that's fine. We tell offensive players, we drill them on that. But if the defender stays straight up, let it go. Like, we're making basketball plays here. And if KD converts that, what, you know, if that goes in, great. Don't give him the foul. You made a tough finish, man. Good for you. Now get back and defend. I saw the shuffle one. Refs are going to miss stuff like that. Like, I'm not making excuse for him, but you've been courtside. I've been courtside. Like, the speed at which this stuff moves, you know, it's inevitable there's going to be a shuffle like that's going to get missed. To me, the charge is more egregious because I think you can see KD almost loading up to go into it. And, like, I don't know, the whistle was a little late for me, too. I hate the whistle coming when it's like, okay, the shot didn't go down. Now we're going to blow it. Like, no, if it's a charge on the play, blow it as soon as it gets there. Like, it's either a foul or it's not. The outcome of the play is irrelevant. So I get the shuffling of the feet, but to me, the charge is probably the more egregious of the two. You know, we've got to, you know, it's a physical sport. I understand there's going to be contact. Drivers should be able to play with a little bit of bump, but defenders stay straight up. No harm, no foul. Let's let it go on. Good finish, and we're going to go come back down the floor. But to wait for the late whistle and then just to say, okay, yeah, there was contact there. We're going to defer to the offensive player. I've never supported that, and I don't think I ever will be deferential to that degree.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I will always, like, try to refrain from really, like, pinning games on the refs. Like, I will say the officiating in that Alabama game was horrific.
It was not good.
I thought overall, I mean, like they missed calls on both sides. It sucks that they, you know, missed some calls for Missouri down the stretch. And it you know, benefited Auburn. But truthfully, like, I mean, if you're the conference solidarity type, like, it's better for Auburn to beat Missouri than for Missouri to beat Auburn from an SEC standpoint. Like, Auburn's a legitimate, you know, one seed right now. And that's better for the league to, you know, and I think them being as good as they've been this year has helped elevate the SEC, who I think is like third in the KenPom ratings. You know, which is, and they just, you know, took the SEC Big 12 challenge. So, yeah, I mean, like, it stinks. I don't look at those, you know, two plays as what cost Missouri. I certainly think
there were plenty of box outs missed that cost decision, Missouri. Like, just,
yeah, like, I mean, Devin Cambridge absolutely murdered them. With as many offensive rebounds as he got, I want to say there are at least two or three that were really, really key offensive rebounds, extending plays for them. Devin Cambridge had 9 offensive rebounds,
like, I
much and respect, 0 defensive rebounds.
Much respect to Devin Cambridge getting out, doing the work there. That guy,
he boards. He's got a pretty elite offensive rebound rate. I think he did kind of the same thing to Oklahoma. Yeah. Had some really kind of key offensive rebounds.
He did it, but against Alabama too.
You know,
that guy just works his ass off on the glass. So I'll give him props and as much love as possible. That, as an, if you were neutral, I love watching guys who work that hard. Like, just, it's, there's something about, like, guys who show up and want to do that kind of work. And there's an art to it, and, you know, understanding angles and how it comes off, and, you know, being that competitive. So props to him.
And the guy's like a junior too, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he's got another year left. But this was,
he's been in the starting lineup, and
I guess
now back out of it.
Yeah, I think this is just a stretch where, to, you know, it's been written about by other outlets, you know, you let a game go against A&M, you let a game go against Bama where you had a chance, against Auburn. I don't really throw the Iowa State game into that mix. You know, Missouri was leading, but the game flow in that was pretty weird. I never felt like Missouri.
Yeah, even if they were able to sort of maintain like a within striking distance and not let them kind of open it up the way they did, I still don't think that's a game that they were going to win.
No.
Like, Iowa State was always going to make a few extra shots.
And I thought Iowa State did a good job countering everything Missouri wanted to do. I thought, you know, that you'd, Missouri found some traction, like, between the 10-minute and the 10-minute mark and the under 4 timeout. Iowa State came out of that media timeout just snuffed out what Missouri was doing. Missouri went away from some side ball screen action to running. I think it's usually like, I think it's a square, like a corner of a square that they hold up when they run it. It's basically a middle ball screen with a pick and pop action. Iowa State just started trapping the middle ball screen, and it was like, okay, we can't run that anymore. And then just the 8-0 run before the break, and Iowa State kind of figured out what Missouri wanted to do offensively. They were trapping and Kobe wherever he wanted to get the ball into spots. Missouri wasn't able, because of the icing action that Iowa State runs on the side, they couldn't really get Amari turning toward the elbow out of the slot. Just there was no Javon Pickett there to kind of be a release valve. You know, when the offense is relying on DeJuan Gordon hitting jumpers, Teron Coleman, you know, right, you know, wriggling his way to the bucket, and Ronnie DeGray, you know, piecing some stuff together, that's just not a solution for, you know, getting a win in Ames. So I didn't feel like that was a game that really got away from them. But, you know, A&M, Alabama, and Auburn, you flip two of those results. You know, A&M and Alabama at the very minimum. You know, it's a 500, a team that's at 500 overall, a team that's at 4-3 in the SEC. And, you know, going into a softer stretch, we can talk about Florida and, you know, the return date to A&M, but you flip two of them and suddenly you're looking at a team that's coming into the home stretch with a chance to look at 500, you know, overall, and maybe get to 7-8 wins in conference. So, you know, the last 2 weeks have been
painful. Yeah, you're pulling, as we like to call it, a Frank Martin.
Yeah, you are. You are now annoying the living crap out of all your colleagues. And the worst part is your net rating is so bad that even if you're playing better, you're still a quad three loss on their resume. It's the beauty of the Frank Martin method, to be just good enough to save his job, but crap all over your tournament resume. It's a wonderful balance to strike, but Frank Martin's mastered it.
Well, what's funny is, like, even so, as Missouri, I think they're, when they hit 2-3, I was like, you know, like, every year there's a team that's absolute, like, just shit in the non-conference. And then they get to SEC play and they win like 8 games or 9 games. You're like, what is going on? Like, a couple years ago, it was Texas A&M. I think it was that Buzz's first year?
Yeah, it was Buzz's first year.
When they won like 10 games and they were terrible. Like, their net for conference play, like, they were still like at a
they were like 117 in KenPom, like, when they probably got to the, like, end of that year. They were 10-8 in conference and 117 in KenPom.
But if you just looked at their net for conference play, like, they were still like a net minus 18 in conference play. Like, they were getting blown out when they lost.
And then just,
but they won all these close games.
That's the Frank Martin school, like, baby. The Frank Martin school.
Right. So it's
school.
Just like, if you, so that's what I'm saying is, like, Frank Martin at South Carolina, they've been to one NCAA tournament there. He's been there a decade and one NCAA tournament, and 4 wins, 5 wins, 6 wins, 11 wins, 12 wins, 7 wins, 11 wins, 10 wins. So that's what, so the 11, 12, 7, 11, 10 is what he did from 2016 through 2020. And they were trash last year, had to deal with COVID. They're 4-4 this year, 99th in KenPom. Like, they're going to win like 9 or 10 games again this year.
Yeah. It's a magical method there.
It's funny.
But yeah, so
but pivoting back to Missouri and their schedule, it does get easier, but also keep in mind that a lot of teams are looking at Missouri on their schedule and thinking, ooh, that's a game we can win.
Yeah, Florida is in a bad way right now. I think they lost Jason Jatobo, of a backup center for the year, to eye surgery. Colin Castleton's been out like the last 6 or 7 games, and CJ Felder is coming back off an injury, but only played 2 minutes last weekend against Oklahoma State. So their front court is absolutely beaten to a pulp right now. That's good if you're Missouri, because if that group was fully healthy, man, you'd worry about that problem on the glass. So it may not be as big of a problem now. Florida is what we've always thought they were, which is a team that has enough talent to be a team that should not be at 41st in KenPom, but they are. They have not beaten a team inside the KenPom top 25 since Ohio State back in November. Just they've taken losses to the likes of Texas Southern, a slumping Maryland team early on. Then they took
they got whipped by Texas Southern.
Yeah, they got handled in Gainesville by Texas Southern. But Texas Southern, to its credit, is likely going to be king of the SWAC. Johnny Jones rebooting it.
I was going to say, that's Johnny Jones, isn't it?
That's JJ, baby. Back in Texas.
Gotta love Johnny Jones coming back to haunt Mike
He's
White.
Back in H-Town and feasting on them H-Town transfers, baby. Johnny Jones. So Maryland has punted on the year when Mark Tershon quit. Like, they've beat South Carolina in Columbia. They've got home wins over Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. Got shellacked at Ole Miss. Got blew a lead at Tennessee. Held on to beat Oklahoma State last weekend, but this is a team that should not be sitting.
They were down bad in that game. They were, down 15.
Yeah, they were down 15 or 16 in that one. So this is a team that's scuffling as well. They have three front court guys out. So they're also a team that's old but don't have a ton of continuity. You know, if you're going to pick a team off, this might be it. You know, Tyree Appleby and Flanders Fleming are playing pretty well as I think dual combo guards. Myron Jones has probably not been kind of the player that I thought he would be as a stabilizing force at point. Brandon McKissick is, you know, defending moderately well, but not shooting the ball well. The three part of the 3-and-D equation isn't happening there. DeRuji's still kind of jack of all trades. But, yeah, Castleton's been out for a bit. You know, they don't have Tobo or Felder that they can really sort of go to right now. So it may be a small lineup with Anthony DeRuji as your center for them. And if that's the case, with four guards, all, you know, 6'6 or smaller, that's a pretty solid situation for Missouri, if, you know, to face, especially in Columbia, where they've had some success against Florida and Mike White. So if you're looking
and it's going to be a snowstorm.
The last snowstorm game was LSU.
There's probably not going to be a lot of people in the building, but Missouri's used to that. Florida's not.
Yeah. So this is a game for, this is a good pickup opportunity. And I would have said that before the season because nobody likes to finish 10-8 more than Mike White does. And you know what? Mike's on track for that again. Only nicked up. So that's a pickup opportunity. A&M has cooled a bit after their hot start. They've lost that close loss to Kentucky. Kicked off a four-game losing streak where they lost at Arkansas in overtime in a wild rally. That game was nuts. Arkansas had to come back and win that. They lost the one at LSU. They had like three shots at the rim to win it in the final minute and bricked them all. And then they took a loss out of Carolina this last Saturday because those teams weren't in the
at home
to Carolina. You can't have that happen. So they're scuffling a bit now. So this is a good pickup opportunity for Missouri. If, you know, we'll see if they get the same kind of hot start they did, but you're right. This is a week where you got to pick up a win. The conditions are right. Two teams that are kind of stumbling a bit, one that's seen its momentum cool off and one that's got injuries that kind of level the playing field for you personnel wise. Now's a good time to get a win, maybe two, if you're Missouri. And frankly, you know, we can talk about this a little bit. If you're this staff, if you can pick up two wins here and get back to 4-5, you know, you're coming down the home stretch with a chance to, you know, I thought this team was going to be 14-16 or 13-17. You're starting to have a conversation where it's pretty comparable.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I think I said it on Twitter, I actually looked at Martin's run here at Missouri. He's never lost more than four games in a row. if they they're at three right now. Yep. So they've lost four games, I believe, a couple times. They lost three games twice in a row in 18. They lost four games in 19. Four games in 20. And three games in 21. So that's the most that they've lost is basically four games. So far this year, like, this is the longest losing streak that they've been on. I mean, it's been ugly, but they've always kind of found a way to bounce back and get a win. Now, it helps when you're coming off Wichita State and you get to play Paul Quinn.
Or coming off Liberty, you know, and you get East Illinois.
Yeah, like, it's easier to like, you know, quell those losing streaks against bad opponents. You know, but they lost two games. They beat Alabama. They lost two games. They went on the road and beat Ole Miss. So they're at three losses now, and they get Florida at home and Texas A&M on the road. And if Konzo Martin wants to sort of, you know, make a case that he should be the guy to lead this program into the future, you have to win one of these two games. Like, you cannot be in year five and have your longest losing streak. You know, like, I realize there's a lot of fans that are going to point to a whole lot of other things that you can't do in year five, da 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 da, and that's fine. Like, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But if you're Konzo Martin and you're trying to make a case that you deserve next year, like, you can't be losing, you know, 5, 6, 7 games in a row. Like, you've got to stop this losing streak. And I think either you got to beat Florida or you got to beat Texas A&M. Otherwise, you know, like, going on the road and beating Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt's, like, I realize Vanderbilt's not great, but winning road games is hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to win on the road.
They've got really, realistically, six pickup opportunities here. They've got Florida.
Like, yeah. You got Ole Miss at home, like, in two Saturdays. And you don't think, like, they're not going to come in a little motivated to beat you after you just stomp them at their place?
They'll be healthy this time, too.
So like, right, you know, I think, like, that's when you're talking about, okay, like, how do you survive the season? How do you, you know, find something to build upon? You got to go out and you got to find a way to win one of these two games.
Yeah. Realistically, you've got Florida A&M. This week, like you said, they're both sort of struggling. You get Vandy, tough. It is a road game, but Missouri's done okay under Martin, kind of in Nashville. You get Ole Miss at home. That's a sub-100 game in KenPom. A little bit of a tough stretch. You know, you got to go. But you do get Arkansas in a return game. Arkansas's looked vulnerable at times this year. Mississippi State has been picked off a couple of times. You get them at home. And then you get Carolina and Georgia at home. There are probably opportunities for four wins here. If you can get to 6-12 in this conference, you know, fans are going to say 12-19 is not great, but if you can do that, you're probably going to have avoided getting into Kim Anderson territory here. The other thing that if you're looking for how Missouri is going to finish, its KenPom rating has stabilized or gone up slightly because Missouri's had close losses against good teams. The way KenPom works in terms of, you know, Missouri's stabilized its point margin and it's getting the benefit of the, you know, the adjusted efficiency margin by playing good teams. That goes out the window right now. I think I calculated it earlier today. If Missouri has basically the same scoring margin moving forward against this part of the schedule, it would drop 10 spots in KenPom. So how Missouri looks during this stretch matters as much as the results too. Like, if you know, it's one thing to, like, have some close losses against Alabama, Auburn, Iowa State. You know, those are games where you can point to and say, okay, that's progress. But close losses to A&M, Carolina, heaven forbid Georgia, but Georgia got Bama, the most schizophrenic team in America, in Athens last week. This is a week where I think this is a time of the year where you have to start showing actual improvement on the floor. How you're playing is better and you're getting results that you can point to that say, you know, it was a brutal start to conference play. We had some opportunities we dropped there, but man, when the schedule turned our favor, we capitalized and we got some wins. We showed that this team can make progress. We know there's got to be some fixes to this roster, maybe in other areas of the program, but we didn't let go of the rope. We got this thing stabilized enough and we had a modest amount of improvement. So that's what starts right now. And like we said a couple weeks ago, this is sort of the part of the schedule where we maybe render a little bit more of a verdict than we do about how they look against Alabama or Auburn. You know, if you're Missouri, you know, I would have said this in the preseason. I would have said it. You know, I did say it after they, you know, were getting hammered by the likes of Liberty on the road or Kansas. This is the part of the schedule where Martin's got to show we have a core that's coming together. We know we have to make some changes to the roster, find a point guard, maybe find a traditional rim protector, but we know what we've got to do, but we've found some pieces and some ways to at least stabilize things. If they can't get results here, I don't know how tenable the argument is. You know, that's going to be up to the athletic director. You know, I'm looking at it right now. There's evidence you can use to make a persuasive case either way, but the on-court results matter over the next 10 to 11 games. There's no tournament berth here, but the staff can now have a part of the schedule where it can say, look, we knew we were going to probably be in the bottom of the SEC and rebuild, but against light teams, we showed some progress and some growth. So we'll see if they can do it.
We will see if they can do it, as usual. So I always like, yeah, the Kim Anderson territory. Go out and get a win this week, and you've won 9 games. Kim Anderson bested that. 9 games with 10 to play?
Yeah.
Kim Anderson bested that win total once. Like, let's slow the roll. Like, this year has been bad. This is, like, historically bad for Missouri, realistically. But let's put Kim Anderson in perspective. So you and I, we're going to watch these games, and we're going to see what happens. I think they get a win. I really do. I don't know which game it's going to be, but I'm going to think they get at least one.
It's my better judgment. I'm saying Florida just because I got no trust in Mike White.
Take
man.
Down the Gators.
I got no trust in Mike White. You know this. Yeah. You know this.
We've talked about this plenty on the pod. This is not a Mike White fan pod. It is a Mike White skeptic podcast.
Mike White should be glad that he coaches at a school where baseball arguably might be the number two sport. Like, I feel like almost any other like serious basketball school with Florida's run under Billy Donovan would have been like, it's here. 8 and we're finishing 7th or 8th in the conference. Maybe we want to go get somebody else. Like, because
this program was winning national championships like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago. Like, there's a reason they still recruit well. It's because, you know, people remember like national championships, you know, like first round draft picks. That's not that long ago.
And now they're 41st in Kimpom. So, yeah.
And that's been about the average. Like, you know, they're never terrible. They're also never good. They were pretty good that second year.
Third year.
Right? But those were like most, what?
Third year, but it was still heavily Billy Donovan's group. Billy Donovan, when he left for Oklahoma City, I think still had a pretty youth-heavy roster. And then Mike and
that was the second year they were protected.
Okay, yeah, it was either year two or three, but they still had some remnants of Billy's guys there. And then, yeah, the roster where they had Kerry Blackshear in that group probably should have been in protected seat category and were not. So, yeah,
that was like Chioza and Devin Robinson.
Yeah, they were pretty good, and they did not. They're not capitalized. So, yeah, we are not Mike White boosters here.
And then lost to South Carolina in the Elite Eight.
God bless Frank Martin. Mike's life.
Oh, he just ruins everything, doesn't he?
Mike's life. So Mike's life could at least...
Like in the best way possible.
Mike's life could at least say, look at the depth of our conference. That's what Mike's life could say that year. Look at the depth of talent in the SEC. South Carolina to a Final Four. But yeah, it's a good week, and we're going to keep cranking out film rooms. I don't know if anybody's looking at them a lot, but we're going to watch games and then cut up more film of them.
They're getting some traffic. If you're not already, like, if you want to kind of know, like, what Missouri is doing on offense, it's helpful to read through the film room posts. The other Matt does a good job. So,
yep.
And you, Matt, do a good job of helping him get the clips there.
Yep. God bless him for taking 15 clips a game and breaking them down. It's work I don't have to do. He's taking that burden off my shoulders of doing all the film breakdown. And it helps that we usually agree on like 90% of the clips. So that's even better when the minds are alike.
So we are going to get out of here. Make sure that you are subscribed and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. Nate and BK are back. They're going to record more regularly. I think that's exciting for everybody. You don't have to listen to just us two dummies talk about basketball. There's football, and football's actually had a pretty productive start to the offseason. So go check out their most recent pod. I believe that dropped last Thursday. This Matt and I will be back next Monday to talk about what happened in against Florida and against Texas A&M. And we will preview the upcoming week as well, which will be an exciting week of playing Vandy and Ole Miss. So until then, take care, everybody. Stay safe through the snowstorm if you're in the greater Midwest area, particularly in Missouri where I am. I don't know if you're getting any of that snow, Matt, but we are about to get hammered. And hopefully we have basketball to watch. So until then, thanks for tuning in, and everybody stay safe.